did a Bachelor of Science in Catering Systems, and I now run my own company, which is a health and safety consultancy called Safer Food Scores. So I thought I'd start to tell you a little bit about that company. So we're based in Hertfordshire, in a town called Berkhamsted. We've only been running for about a year and a half now, so a new company. So when we're talking about rising to the top, I don't think we've quite got there yet, but hopefully we're on our way. Most of our clients are in London and in the home counties, though we do have clients that have sites all over the country in which we travel to visit them. Two main strands, about 50-50. 50% of our work is training courses, health and safety and food safety. The other side is consultancy. So the training courses we run, mainly accredited to the Chartered Institute of Environmental Health, so some of them are half-day courses. We go right up to advanced level, six-day courses. And we also do a number of bespoke courses, so we'll do tailor-made courses that suit a company's procedures, and also where there's not an accredited course, for example, in food labelling and in food allergens, we've designed our own to meet the market needs. Our specialist subjects, although most of us are actually chartered environmental health practitioners, which means that we're trained in all sorts of things like air pollution, noise nuisance, housing standards, our specialisms are food hygiene and health and safety. And in particular, we like to think that we're experts on scores and the doors schemes. And for those of you that aren't sure what that's all about, that's probably the main driver for new business for us at the moment. This is where local authorities run schemes in their areas so that when an EHO comes and carries out a food safety inspection, they mark you according to 0 right up to 5. Sometimes it's stars, sometimes it's just points. And when they've done that, they base that on the hygiene standards they found and how well the business was managed. They then publish that on a website that the public and probably more importantly, the media have access to, and also encourage you to put the certificate at the entrance to your premises, hence scores on the doors. So a lot of new clients come to us because they're wanting to get a five-star certificate, and they want to make sure that they do those little bits extra to get there. So you sort of understand the sort of things that we get involved in. I looked at what I'd been dealing with this week. So on Monday morning, I was mainly involved in alleged food poisoning investigations. So our clients will come to us and we'll manage that for them. So if somebody comes to them and says, you know, I ate at your restaurant, I'm now feeling very poorly, we'll get in contact with that customer. We'll find out what their symptoms were, how long they lasted for, how long it took them before they became ill, because it's generally thought that the last place you ate at is where you became ill from, which is rarely the case, so sometimes it's getting that across. Then we'll find out, you know, exactly what they had to eat, look at the records in the business that it's come from, make sure everything was fine over the days previous to the person eating out, and how many of those meals they may be served that day, and determine whether it's likely to have been caused by them, in which case we will visit the premises and offer advice, or to get back to the customer and explain that in actual fact it probably wasn't caused by them at all, and they can feel confident that, you know, the company's taken it seriously and carried out a full investigation. On Monday afternoon, I was carrying out, we have a client who's got three large cash and carries. They're importers and wholesalers, mainly of Oriental foods. And we've recently redesigned their food safety procedures and written quite a lot of HACCP plans for them. So that was rolling it out to the senior and middle managers just to make sure that they knew what the changes were and the importance of making sure they put them into place. On Tuesday, I was in Bermondsey meeting with an environmental health officer, so a local authority enforcement officer who enforces food safety, health and safety legislation. And this is a contract catering client who has just moved their central production unit to Bermondsey. And quite a lot of my work is involved in getting, is challenging sometimes legal opinions. And in this case, it was an ill-informed EHO who felt that this particular unit needed local authority approval, which would have meant they needed health marks and lots of extra procedures, which in actual fact wasn't necessary. So That was my meeting then. And then in the afternoon, I was mainly dealing with helpline queries. We run a helpline for the National Association of Master Bakers. So it's a trade association, which is generally, most of the members are craft bakers that produce for maybe three or four other retail shops. So it's dealing with all sorts of queries to do with food labelling, how often they need to get their gas appliances tested, whether they have to have guarding on their machines, some of them. But yes, very interesting, lots and lots of queries. Wednesday, here I am talking to you. And later on today, I'll be driving to Scarborough to stay on a caravan on a holiday park. So not only is the uniform not that glamorous, sometimes the accommodation isn't terribly glamorous neither. But tomorrow we're doing some regional manager training. So it's the start of the season for a large holiday park group. And it's making sure that those managers are aware, really, of the importance of following their own procedures and that they're aware of the consequences. So we do lots of role play, putting them into the position that maybe they're getting cautioned and questioned by the EHO. And we dress up and things like that. So that's a typical week. And I'd like to say that Friday I take the day off, but it's a new business and it doesn't tend to work like that at the moment. There's lots of hours that we're having to put in. So some of our clients, you probably recognise the one in the middle. We have all sorts, really. All of them related to food. We have importers, wholesalers, airline companies, gentlemen's clubs. Jamie Oliver's, we do all the training for the Barbacoa restaurant in London and 15 in London. Champneys, we do their training in the Tring spa. So quite a range of customers, really, but probably a mainstay is hospitality, which is obviously where my background is. So where did I start? So I started in 1984 at Sheffield Poly. Now, you probably get a theme about my career as we've spoken today, how planning and determining, doing all these things to reach the top. And I don't really feel that my career was like that. It's been more like I've kind of spoken to somebody and, oh, that sounds like a good idea. And I've kind of got to where I am a bit by chance more than anything, I think. But listening to people this morning, I think networking was a big part of it. And taking opportunities, you know, when they're put to you, and probably never saying no to a lot of things, which, you know, I usually regret when it's like 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm finishing something off for somebody. But so I started at Sheffield Poly. Originally, I started on a business studies degree. But unfortunately, the summer before I'd spent bumming around Europe and I still felt I needed to do a bit more of that. So I only actually stayed for 3 months on business studies and took 2 years off, did lots of hospitality work in those 2 years off. So barmaid, chambermaid, waitress, all sorts of things, apple picker, sort of it was Europe and Israel. Low points was probably a campsite toilet cleaner, high points canoe instructor in the Ardèche Valley. So lots and lots of experience, which definitely held me in good stead for a career in the hospitality industry. Then in 1986, I went back to Sheffield Poly and I started the catering systems degree. Somebody asked me earlier on today how that happened. Why did I choose the degree? And to be perfectly honest, I met somebody when I was on business studies who was doing this degree. I'd never even done cookery O level, which was what you did do at that time when you moved into this. But they told me that the placement year could be in Canada. So I thought, oh, sounds like the course for me. And that's why I chose it. But I did love every minute of it. I found it so interesting. And then I was lucky enough to go to Canada for my third year, because it was a four-year course at that time, a sandwich course. And they started me off as a cocktail bar waitress. And due to, I think, my English accent more than anything, the tips that I got there then managed to pay off my overdraft that I'd built up in the previous 2 years. So that was quite a bonus. And then I worked in all the different departments of the Holiday Inns there. And finally, I graduated in 1990 with the HCIMA Best Student Performance Award. So that's now the Institute of Hospitality, but that's what they used to be called. And that's me with a hat. Everybody had a long curly perm in those days. So my work experience, first of all, I went back to Canada somewhere along the line I'd married a Canadian, so that fitted quite well. But then we decided to come back to this country, and going back to networking, Mike Rimmington, who I think a lot of you in this room will know, one of the visiting fellows, he managed to put me in contact with an ex-Sheffield Poly catering student at that time, who was an area manager for Toby Restaurants. So I met up with him, and again, it was, you know, a 20-minute quick interview. There were no assessment centres or anything like that to do with it. And they put me on a fast-track general management scheme. So that was good, sort of, because within 3 months, it was very fast-track, and I found myself the general manager of the Beulah Spa in Crystal Palace. And the reason for the fast-tracking was the previous manager who I'd trained under was caught for embezzling money from the company. So it was all very quick and like, oh, who can we put in place? Oh, Melissa, she seems to be getting the hang of it, so she can be the general manager. So it was like a 120-seater restaurant, beautifully refurbished old pub, three bars, but it was very much still Southeast London criminals pub. So we used to have Charlie Cray used to come in there when he still had Scarlett's nightclub in Croydon. We used to have, some of you might know, Cynthia Payne used to come in there with her high class prostitutes for a Sunday lunch. But mainly they were a rough crowd, but if you were on the right side of them, you know, they protected you quite well. So that was a lot of hours. Fantastic experience, you know, meeting all sorts of people I'd have never met in other walks of life. Sad story, really, because eventually I got moved to Stockbroker Belts, Epsom, Surrey. And one of the reasons for that was because early on in the days when I was training under this manager, it was quite a violent pub. And I'd actually witnessed a glassing of a teenager in the pub. And so, strangely enough, everybody was behind the bar, but when the police turned up, the South London mentality, nobody could remember who'd done it or who was involved, except for me, you know, brought up, you know. So I was the main witness, and about 2 to 3 months before it was due to go to court, I started getting threatening phone calls, all this kind of thing. So we were moved to Epsom, Surrey, where it was a very, very different sort of thing. But again, you know, great fun. Lots of ex-jockeys, you know, it's close to the place where the Derby's, lots of racing stables around there. So that's where I went from there. But what I did find was, I was finding the work of the people that used to come round and inspect us, so the local authority, EHOs, and also our own company auditors, I was finding the work they did quite a bit more interesting than what I was doing at that time, and it did seem to be a lot less hours as well. So what I ended up doing, I went to work for a local council. Again, this was one of those things that I spoke to somebody who was doing this job. They said, why don't you come in and spend a day with us, see if you actually do like it. So I did, went on inspections in the local area for the day, talked to lots of people, made sure I talked to the chief EHO. And then within 2 weeks, they phoned me and said, oh, we actually have a vacancy. Would you like to apply for it? So that was good. I managed to get that job. They obviously did interview other people. And I became what's known as a technical officer with a food safety specialism. Then I decided if I was going to move any further, I really needed to get the full environmental health degree. So what was very good was the fact that I was able to submit the syllabus from my catering systems degree to the University of Greenwich. And instead of having to do a four-year degree in this, I just I got lots of exemptions from the food safety part of things. And I managed to do that in 2 years whilst working. So it was hard work, but I had to learn all these other areas here, the pest control, pollution, the housing standards. And then I became an EHO, eventually a chartered EHP, where you have to do some extra qualifications and you have to keep your confidence up to date, so you have to go on lots of courses. And eventually I was an environmental health manager, so I managed the team responsible for about 1,500 food businesses in the borough, so responsible for their health and safety and food hygiene enforcement. So after 13 years doing that, I went to work freelance. So I was working for lots of different consultancies. So I felt that, you know, it was good. I had my hospitality background. One of the reasons why they said they took me on at the local authority was because I'd explained to them just how caterers can pull the wool over the local authority's eyes. So they liked the fact that I could see that side of things as well. So these were some of the companies that I was the client manager for. So quite large ones, really. The House of Commons is obviously one you would recognise. And during that time as well, I did lots of interesting assignments. I went out to a large hotel in Turkey with the BBC watchdog crew to try and investigate why they were making so many people ill. I'm not sure we ever worked out why. I think everything had been put right before I got there. But that was interesting, working with a television crew. I also went around the world. Every year we used to do a global food hygiene service. So we went to South Africa, Malaysia, Australia, Germany, New York. And we'd go around domestic premises, swabbing the place, finding the dirtiest areas of your kitchen. It was something that was sponsored by Reckitt Benckiser that make Detox. So you get involved in quite a lot of interesting things. So after spending about 6 years working for other people, thinking I'm working very long hours, meeting all these deadlines, and I'm seeing them buying bigger and bigger houses, I thought, oh, I think it might be time that I give this a try myself. So like I say, it was probably about a year and a half ago, I set up this company, Safer Food Scores. So I've had to do a lot of marketing. I send out e-newsletters every week to a large base of people working, doing health and safety managers, really, and training managers in the hospitality industry. I write a lot of articles. I write for the hospitality magazine on a regular basis. I send things into the local newspaper, but most of my work I either get through Google searching, I get through EHO referrals, which are always really, I do take them on, but they're not really the ones that I particularly like. It's people that they're just about to be prosecuted, really, and it's the last chance they've got, so, you know, they hand them my card and say, oh, this, she'll sort it all out for you. So they can be a lot of trouble because there's usually a reason why their standards are so low. But now more and more I'm getting lots of referrals from my clients who are speaking to other people in their networking groups, and that's great. So it's I'm having to do less marketing now because more and more work's just coming my way, really. So I think that's really all I have to say. I got where what I'm doing now is possibly by chance, possibly by working very hard. And someone says to me, you know, when you're starting up a new business and you're putting a lot of hours into it, somebody said to me, well, you know, as long as you're always better than your competitors, providing a service better than your competitors, you're going to get to the top in the end. And that's what we try to do at this company here. Okay, thank you. It's mostly on associates, so I have two employees that are mostly admin and marketing type of work, and then the rest are associates. So they're people that they might do work on a freelance basis for other people. But there's about 10 that I use very regularly that I've worked with for about 6 or 7 years.
Thank you, Minister. Can I ask a quick question? You mentioned about the scores on the doors, and you said that they are encouraged to put the scores on the doors.
Yes.
Which suggests they don't have to. Is that right?
That's right. At the moment, it's voluntary. It's next month. The Food Standards Agency are going to relook at this. To determine whether they need to actually bring in a law to make people do it. Because until everybody's doing it, it won't have the effect that they're hoping, which is to raise hygiene standards.
Those who get the good scores do it, and those that
don't. Absolutely, yeah. And Wales, you know, it's going through their parliament at the moment, right. And it's looking very promising that, you know, in 2 years' time, it will be a legal requirement for them to put them.
One of the difficulties with EHOs has been differing standards between different boroughs. I know we've got home authorities, which make it easier. But the same thing with schools on the doors, isn't it? Not everybody's running the same system.
Yes, that is a problem. There's star rating systems. There's these, there's the food standards agency scheme, but that is the one that's definitely increasing in amount. I think there's about 185 local authorities that are running the food standards agency one, and they're putting a lot of funding into the local authorities to encourage them to take on their scheme as well, which is actually the better one for business. It's got a lot more protection for appeals and things like that.
Thank you.
Later, and first we will. It's working. At first, we would be nice to put some DVDs to show you some information about our university. And какой первый?
Вот этот маленький, нет, вот этот с вертолета, скажи, посмотрим.
David,
yeah? So you want to show the DVD first,
yes.
Do you?
Okay. It's a video made by helicopter from the top on the whole our university. It's really beautiful.
Пару слов скажу. Уважаемые коллеги, уважаемые студенты, мы бы хотели чуть-чуть рассказать о нашем университете.
Dear colleges, dear students, we want to say about our university.
Потом, сейчас минуточку. Потом я расскажу, как я дошла до профессора.
After that, Галина, talk about your life way, how she began the professor, became a professor, became a dean of our faculty.
Очень кратко. На территории университета 18 корпусов.
On the territory of our university we have 80 buildings, 80 buildings. Bad English.
Надо было, наверное, рассказать, скажи все. Да, и второй.
And another one.
Университет занимает территорию 54 гектара.
Our university covers the territory of 54 hectares.
Насчитывает 10 тысяч студентов, более 10 тысяч студентов.
More than 10,000 students.
И входит в десятку лучших университетов России.
And it's in top 10 of best universities in Russia.
Русская зима, скажи.
Russian winter in our university.
Наш ректор.
Our rector.
Bassin.
Swimming pool. Concert hall.
Наш ректор.
Our rector.
Студенты.
Students.
Маленькая страна. Кто мне расскажет, кто подскажет, где она, где?
point on the metro map of Moscow.
Это, скажи, надо было сказать столовая. Клуб веселых и находчивых студенты. Переведешь?
Нет, клуб веселых.
Нет, да?
Студентам. It's our students joking. Our seat in the university. Our students on the parade of students on the Red Square.
Ну, сейчас да, несколько слов. Да, несколько слов о себе. У нас, чтобы стать профессором, нужно пройти несколько ступенек.
To become a professor in our education system, people should pass many stairs to the top.
Дважды защитить диссертацию.
Twice defense a dissertation project.
Сначала кандидатскую пишешь в аспирантуре. Я закончила аспирантуру Московского государственного университета имени Ломоносова.
Wait a second. At first it's to take the candidate work in the Galina and it Moscow University of Lomonosov. It's the most famous university in Moscow.
Потом 20 лет, приблизительно 20 лет, я занималась научной работой, разрабатывала тему дипломной работы и через 20 лет защитила докторскую диссертацию. Это второй этап к продвижению к профессору.
For 20 years, Галина work in science researches to prepare its project to defend the doctor level.
И где-то приблизительно через год после того, как я защитила диссертацию, через год я получила звание профессора.
And after the 1 year, when the doctor diplomacy will be defended, and Галина takes the professor title.
Чтобы получить у нас профессора, надо иметь монографии, научные публикации, среди них монографии, статьи, брошюры, обязательно подготовить и защитить аспирантов.
Продолжайте. To become a professor, you should have publications in research monographies, write a lot of articles, make an I don't know how, make an aspirants to make them graduate.
И тогда государственная, высшая государственная аттестационная комиссия.
Проще.
The
high level of government department who give the titles of professor.
Присваивает.
Give the title of professor.
Звание профессора. Государство.
I mean, it's скажи. Government. Government only government can give a title of professor.
Я имею более 70 публикаций научных.
Галина has more over than 70 science publications.
Кроме того, мы еще должны обязательно, как преподаватель, профессор, я обязательно должна заниматься учебно-методической работой, писать учебники, программы, учебно-методические комплексы создавать.
Moreover, the Galina should practice the as a lecturer, write science books for students, study students.
И кроме того, я должна вести учебную работу. Я как декан, профессор вообще в России выполняет годовую нагрузку аудиторную 600 часов.
And moreover, Galina should make her administrative work in our faculty to take the study hours to make wait a second. To make the schedule of the studying for students.
Я как декан, которым я работаю уже, деканом я работаю 13 лет.
Галина is a dean of our faculty for 13 years. 30 years.
Выполняю нагрузку учебную, аудиторную провожу со студентами 300 часов в год.
She has more over than 300 hours of lectures in a year. With lectures for students in a year.
Кроме научной работы и научно-методической, учебно-методической.
And she has some science researches and administrative work with lectures.
Да.
Complete with lectures.
Да, все. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ну, ты сказал, что это... сейчас я скажу сама, да. Уважаемые коллеги, я подготовила лекцию, но, к сожалению, я практически не говорю на английском языке. Очень сожалею об этом. Поэтому, чтобы сэкономить время, лекцию мою представит вам мой студент, переводчик. Okay. Да, вы уж тоже, ну, так, отнеситесь очень спокойно. Если что-то не так, нас извините. Мы только учимся, мы еще не волшебники.
Галина prepared some lecture about the hospitality in Russia, and because she don't know, she know a little bit in only English. To save the time, I read this lecture for you.
Okay.
It's a plan of our lecture. It's the main tendencies of development of hotel enterprises in Russia, development of international hotel chains in Russia. We talk about the development of mini hotels and boutique hotels in Russia, hospitality and IT technologies in Russian hospitality sphere and Russian hotel associations, like a part of the World Hotels Association. To begin with, Russian hotel business have a long history, like in any other, like in all over the world. And now we have all kinds of hotels. It's a standard hotel, boarding house, campings, motels, hostels, everything. And in our country now it's more over than 18,000 thousand hotels now. The main tendencies of development of hotel enterprises in Russia. At first, it's development of international hotel chains on the territory of Russia, which starts to develop from 1991 after the end of the Soviet Union. It was an open market for international chains. After the more than 10 years ago, on Russian market comes our own Russian hotel chains, and always we have a development of small hotels, boutique hotels, because we have a lot of old historical buildings, like in St. Petersburg, like in Moscow, and inside this building, developing boutique hotels.
Бутики, которые, да?
And it's the main. It's new to develop the computer technologies in the hotel booking. This hospitality industry, restaurant booking, ticket booking. Development of international chains. As I say, they come in after the fall of the Soviet Union, and you can see it's famous brands like Hilton Plaza, Marriott, Sheraton, Radisson. The main advantages of these hotel chains is a high level of corporate standards, high quality of giving service for customers, and the well-known brands all over the world. People come from different countries and they know the brand and stay in these hotels. It's easy. It's the brands of international hotel chains. And now I want to present some diagram. It's a number of hotels, of international hotels chains in Moscow, St. Petersburg, Yekaterinburg, Kazan, and Samara. It's it's big cities in our country. And there was two lines. The green one is show the active hotels in now, which are now working, and planned hotels. So it's a plan for 2 or 3 years. So it's a large development. In 2 or 3 years, we have a hotel boom. And our Russian hotel chains. We have some basic features. We start development not so long. We don't have long history of hotel business. But the basic features of our Russian hotel chains, we give the same level of service as international hotel chains. It's a rapidly growing market of hospitality. We know that we know how to manage in the specific of Russia, Russian mentality people, Russian law, and it's our main advantages. So international hotel chains come to our market, but they don't know the specificity of this market. And some of Russian hotel chains, it's a Helio Park. As you see, have 15 hotels, not only in Russia, it's in Ukrainian and German, in Baden-Baden, and it's big chain. It's an in-tourist chain, nine hotels. And in 2001, there was created a special hotel chain for administrative people, for president, like a president residence for top level of visitors of guests. It's a special president hotel and the Golden Ring chain. Do you know Golden Ring? It's a ring of famous historical cities around the Moscow. And in this in these cities and towns, there are special like diplomatic class hotels, top level. And it's more than 20 hotels in European part and in all over the country. It's another type. It's Alarosa. It's a three-star hotel, three, four-star hotels for middle level of customers. It's another one chain. And another one to three-star chain. It's Amax. Cheap hotels for middle level with 100 number found. And now we talk about the mini hotels and boutiques in Russia. These mini hotels in Russia developing really, really rapidly. I mean the region of Sochi, because it's Olympic Games in 2040, and it's a large market of small hotels and mini hotels and boutique hotels. The main features, it's a cheap accommodation in high season. I mean that it's in summer or in winter, because Sochi not so far away from Krasnaya Polyana, where snowboarding, skiing, ski resort. It's well-equipped numbers, not worse than three-star hotels, but it's cheaper. It provides conditioner, TV, refrigerator, half board, and transfer to the hotel from hotel to airport. And as I say, the same quality service like in three-star hotels. And of course, friendly atmosphere because it's family hotels, the different kind of service. Some of them. Yeah, it's maybe some buildings not so fashionable, but inside it's nice rooms, nice numbers. And Galina Petrovna want to say something about special boutique hotels.
Да. У нас сейчас развивается очень хорошо эта система отель-бутик, и она...
It's quickly development market of hotel boutiques in our country.
Учитывает специфику нашего менталитета и вообще специфику русской культуры.
The management of these hotels takes the use the specificity of Russian culture, of Russian mentality, of mentality of Russian people.
Особенно успешно развиваются такие отели в Петербурге.
The most growing market in St. Petersburg.
Где, скажем, комнаты оборудуются под интерьер 19 века, 18 века.
In these hotels, rooms look like interior of these rooms look like from old ages, like 18 or 19 age.
И оборудуются интерьеры по, скажем, книгам наших писателей русских, например, Достоевский.
And the idea of fashion of these interiors is about it's chained with our Russian famous writers like Dostoevsky.
Номера не нумеруются там 1, 2, 3, а называются Грушенька, Анастасия Филипповна.
Numbers don't have numbers 1, 2, 3. Every one number have its own name by the name of the main personage of the book of our Russian writers.
Yeah.
And now we talk about hospitality and IT technologies. Now in the world, it's a mighty four of global distribution system and. It's Amadeus, as you see, it's 19% of market. It's by the four systems, Amadeus, Galileo, Sabre, and WorldSpam. And only 10% everything else. In Russia, we have our own system for booking of air tickets. It's Siren, and booking system for hotels, it's Alien. And especially for our Russian company, Aeroflot, it's a fly company, there is a special system, Gabriel. It's work only in this company. It's our own booking systems. It's a logos of these systems. And now we talk about Russian Hotel Association. The main idea is to say that it's organizing, it makes better organization between the hotels in Russia. Provides some exhibitions to hotel managers. It improves the business, its business market. The main thing is Russian Hotel Association. It's a member of International Association of Hotels and Restaurants, so it's connected with the international system and associations. It means that we have the same corporate standards, rules in the business.
Ну, я еще должна сказать, ты уже заканчиваешь, да?
Да.
Два слова я еще хочу сказать, переведи, пожалуйста. В России, конечно, еще много проблем, связанных с гостиничным бизнесом, потому что мы в бизнес только вступаем, и поэтому мы очень много используем из того, что накоплено в европейских гостиницах, в вашей стране, скажем, Хилтон, Мариотт, Редисон и другие гостиницы.
Галина Петровна, what to say is that, yeah, we have some problems, it's big problems in our hotel, hospitality sphere, but it's connected with, we just started to do this business in our country. 10 years, it's not so large period for such a sphere like a hospitality. It's we just started this business, and we use European hospitality management, United Kingdom hospitality management as a teachers for our sphere of hospitality. We use the same programs.
У нас мы долго развивались как бы в отрыве от глобальной системы гостиничной, поэтому ну, у нас были свои критерии, свои оценки обслуживания, а сейчас мы стараемся все использовать мировой опыт в этом плане.
We have a long time development separately from the war global systems of hotel management, hotel booking systems. But now we try to reach it as faster as we can. Yeah.
Спасибо.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Вот это еще.
Take one question. Any question, anybody? I've got one question. What's your ambition for the hospitality industry when you graduate?
Me? Or I think my wish is to take my own hotel or a hostel, but I think it will be in 15 years. not in my near future. I need to graduate at first, because I'm just only on third course student.
Спасибо, Галина.
Thank you very much, David. Good afternoon. I feel very brave to stand between students with food and drink just behind them, so I will be as brief as I can. I have brought some DVDs with me, which I was going to show you, which we made last year, which got 8 case studies on some of the grants the Trust has given. But what I'll do is leave copies with David, and he can show them to the classes later on to save time, so everybody can eat and drink a bit earlier. So just a brief question. How many of you have heard of the Savoy Educational Trust?
I knew that table would have. Yeah, okay. All right, okay. So it's quite interesting. What I want to do is just talk a little bit about it, because a lot of people have heard about it and never quite sure. They'll say, well, what actually do you do? We do a huge amount of work, probably best known as an enabler and a behind-the-scenes operator, and we do a great variety of projects. So I'm going to give you a brief history of the Trust, and I think the best way for you to understand what it does and bring it to life is to show you some grants the trustees awarded last year, what their current strategy is, as I say, the DVD, and then we can do questions a bit later on. So the Trust was founded in April 1961 by four directors of the company that was then called the Savoy Hotel Limited. And the main aim then, and still is today, it's the advancement and development of education, training and qualifications within the hospitality industry within the United Kingdom. And that has not altered. And you don't need to be a maths student to work out how old we are, April 1961. So April last year saw the Trust becoming 50. So we had a fantastic celebration event. We actually held it at the Savoy Hotel because that's where the Trust was founded. And the new head chef, Bernard Meyer, went to town, as you can see, with the substantial canapés, I think he called them. And they put on, they've got a new system for the canapés. They are these beautiful stainless steel frames and sheets of glass, so he can make any design he wants, depending on what space he's got. And I said naively, oh, do I need to speak to the florist? He said, no, I'll do a few flowers for you. Well, as you can see, that it was fantastic. So what does the Trust actually do? Well, we ticked over with dividend income from what was the Savoy Hotel Limited until April 1998. And then Blackstone Colony came along and bought out the Savoy Company, which made quite a lot of news. So the Trust had to dissolve their shares and realise their assets, so we got £38.5 million. So we became grown up. We became in the top 300 charities in the country and had to really work out what we do. So there are five trustees. They meet four times a year and consider a lot of applications. Probably 80% of the applications are from FE and HE, and then the trustees say yes or no. Recent years, they give away between £750 and £1 million each year. So what they're trying to do is making sure they're investing not just in the present skills for the industry, but the future skills as well. So they work very much in partnership. They're very, very unlikely to fund a project on their own. They always want to make sure there is some other partner involved, as you'll learn a bit later on, the partner involved in the project that we sponsored here. And they're trying to make sure that we really help make an impact on this industry, which, as you know, is such a major contributor to the UK economy. Now, some recent statistics from the British Hospitality Association, they commissioned Oxford Economics to do a new report. And this is the statistics out of the report. It's the fifth largest employer. It's one of the only employing areas that is still growing and providing jobs. We employ 1 in 14 workers, 2.44 million jobs. They estimate the turnover is 90 billion, and there's huge job creation potential as well. So again, one of the few industries that is growing. And this is why the present government is paying such amount of attention to hospitality and tourism at the moment. We know it's really, really regarded as a very important economic driver, but if you get Ufi Ibrahim, the new chief exec of the BHA, on the subject, she is still getting very, very cross with the government because she said they're not really doing any tangible action to make sure people get the importance of the sector. VAT is still there at 20%, but she's really cracking on with that. Air passenger duty, incredibly expensive. The amount of rules and regulations, we've heard a bit about food safety, but if you add in all the other regulations you need to set up anything in the business, there's a huge amount of work doing. So our office is situated within the BHA, so we hear practically weekly that Ufi and Martin Couchman are having meetings with various government bodies to really try and crack on the importance of the industry. So, moving back to the Trust, I thought I'd give you four very different examples of grants the trustees awarded last year. The first one, the clink. Now, Vic, you can't answer this, but does anybody know? Have you heard of the clink?
Yep.
Yes? Okay. So the clink is fascinating. It's the first commercial restaurant within a prison, and it's in a Category B prison. So when you go, you are very aware you are in a prison. 800 staff, 1,400 inmates. And originally, there was no catering facility in the prison at all. So the staff got their crisps, can of Coke or whatever, from the local shops in Sutton and would sit in their car in the car park to eat their food. So there was an area that was the storeroom for the uniforms, massive area, and a few people had a brilliant idea to try and make sure that they could make the prisoners more employable when they left prison and to try and stop the huge reoffending statistics, that they would give them some more skills. So the main purpose is to train prisoners in food preparation and food service skills to get their City and Guilds qualifications. They find them jobs in the industry, and they've linked with the Springboard charity who mentor them, literally meet them at the gate as they come out and help them get their first job. Because it's incredibly expensive to keep people in prison. They think the reoffending costs us £11 billion a year, and the total cost to keep someone in prison per year is over £45,000. So, and they know that about 75% reoffend within the first year if they don't have a job or have accommodation. So the clink are trying to reduce this by equipping these prisoners with the social and life skills and relevant work experience. So obviously, as I said, it is a Category B prison, but what they make sure is that people have done all of the courses. So whether it's anger management, whether it's drug rehabilitation, whatever their problems were, they have a huge amount. They've done all the courses. They've passed very strict security clearance. And it's only in when they've got 18 months left, they're allowed to apply for a job. And it's a very strict process they go through to work in the restaurant. Vic does fantastic work there, and he probably hasn't told you about it, but he does absolutely, he's there once a month, and he's got a huge group of his networking friends. It's how many?
5 or 6 times.
Oh, sorry, 5 or 6 times a month. If you want to meet a networker, meet Vic. He has, and he's got this fantastic network of people involved, all from the industry, who go in there and help. So it's brilliant. So how did we get involved? We were asked by the clink to help funding cover the costs of 2 of their assessors so they could do the MVQ qualifications. What they did was very clever. The 2 assessors we've funded are both ex-offenders. So they are very good examples for the prisoners that there is a life after crime. So that one works really well. And this is the restaurant. And this, as I say, was the uniform store. Now, it's an incredible... There is no window. There's no daylight in there. But they have done it so well. You have to book, funny enough, to go there. You can't just walk in because you are in the middle of a prison. All right. And so you have plastic cutlery and you have plastic glasses. But in the kitchen, the chef have the full equipment. So you see some of the people, you think he's probably a murderer, and he has got the 12-inch Sabatier cook's knife and he's chopping veg. You think, OK, but it's very, very strictly policed, as you can imagine. They go through a metal detector as they come on duty, and there is a shadow board for all of the equipment, and they leave their prison number as they use the equipment. Absolutely fascinating. Upstairs as well, which I haven't got a photo of, there's a private dining room, and they're encouraged, and a lot of local businesses now have a board meeting there and then have their lunch there. What's also brilliant about this is all the furniture is made by the prisoners. The furniture is absolutely stunning, isn't it, Vic?
Yep.
And it's made by the prisoners. And also on the glass wall around the private dining room is beautiful poetry, again, written by prisoners. So that's an interesting example. The second one, back a bit more, no prisoners there as far as I know, is St George's School in Blackpool. This is a Church of England Business and Enterprise College located in Blackpool, and it was given for their food development room. If I show you, this was before. We gave them 35,000, and this is after, and we've got some of the lovely little pupils there. Because what they discovered was that they had a very old, what the original old food technology room. Nobody was very interested in catering. There was no progression on to post 16 courses. And so the, because of the lack of facilities, there was the amount of practical related experience they could give the pupils was very little. So it was quite interesting. I've just heard, this is from the deputy head, and he said that what's happened now, for next year's GCSE, they've got 45 students going to take catering's GCSE, and they had zero before. And as he said, part due to the appointment of an inspirational teacher, but also the environment. And that the new teacher they've got is a Miss Bentley, and she said that it is absolutely fantastic for her to have the really, really good facilities that are close to industry-style catering standards. And she said now the pupils want to be are going to want to be chefs and run their own business. And there's huge unemployment in the Blackpool area, and so it's fascinating. So then we thought, OK, that's the head and that's the food technology teacher. They're obviously going to say that. So we asked Chloe, who's age 12, and she said, the catering room is amazing. When I walked in, it was wow. Can't get better than that, can you? And now they love coming in to the room. And what's also happened, and this Rebecca, age 16, who's doing the Welsh Joint Education Board catering, she said, you know, they couldn't believe, beyond their expectations, a privilege to learn in this room. So it's really, really working well for the students. And what the deputy head said as well is it's making that room a great feature of the school. They have lots of local clubs and communities now use it. Weight Watchers love it, apparently, because they can do real cooking now rather than virtual, which how if you're in Weight Watchers you do virtual cooking, I didn't quite understand, but anyway, they're now doing real cooking for Weight Watchers. So that's working really, really well. The FE College example I've got for you is very, very different, and this is in West Cheshire College. This was only a very small grant, but we've done this for about 3 years now, because this was to help the college, as it says, with a luncheon club they use for an elderly community at Blassen. And they had to pay for the hire of the church hall. But it's a way the college used to help their special needs learners get the experience they need, because it's a very, very safe environment for them. Low numbers, but it can get them through their NVQs. And it was originally funded by the NHS Healthy Living Network. They, of course, cut the funding. So Phil Gray, who's a fantastic lecturer, he said, actually, will you help? And I thought, it's not something the trustees normally do, but I'll ask them. So he said, well, it's a really deprived area, and we need to give the elderly residents access to a hot and healthy lunch. It's only once a week. It's every Friday. So they get a regular client base of 30 customers, and it's the student special needs, and it really helps them. And so here are some of them in their whites, and really, really proud to be it. And one of the students, who's Sean, who I've met, he's absolutely fantastic. And he couldn't read and write. He never went to school, but he's found his vocation with cooking. He said, I can do it. Someone shows me what to do, I can do it well. I love it. And then they got tips and they went bowling at Christmas, which he thought. And what he said now is, I'm going to learn to read and write and I want to be a chef. I'm really glad I did it. And he was given a prize. They gave him Student of the Year. And as a prize, he came to London. And he said, you know, I saw all of the things that you see on telly. And he thought, wow. And he said it was sound, which I've asked my son. My son said that means it was okay. And he said, if I didn't do this, I would be hanging out with mates in the park. And I know what that would lead to. But he said, now I want to work in a hotel. He's now 18 and he's on an entry level 3 hospitality programme. But then we also spoke to Mary, who is 82 and is a regular customer every Friday here. And she said, young people get such bad reputations these days. So it is really nice to meet ones who are absolutely lovely, kind, considerate and always smiling. She can't use her hands. And so Nathan cuts her food up for her and gives her a cheeky wink. He's got Down syndrome, and she said, I know he sometimes has problems walking, just like me. But since my husband died, I've been lonely, so I like to meet friends for lunch, and we have a good gossip on a Friday, and it gets me out of the house. Phil Gray takes great care of us and of the students, and they are a happy bunch, laughing and joking. If it's someone's birthday, we get a cake and we have a sing-song. I don't know what I'd do on a Friday if I didn't have this to look forward to. Meeting these students helps me keep going. Now, it's only £3,200 from the trustees' point of view. It is a fantastic project. So what Phil has said to us is that if we hadn't stepped in, he couldn't have carried on. So the special needs students couldn't have got their experience, etc. When they came to London, it, as he said, it was life-changing. Or Sean said it was sound because they stayed in... Some of them had never stayed in a hotel before. Some of them had never been to London before. So it was a great leveller as a grant for us, I think, and was fantastic for us to do. Now, this one, probably familiar now. We're on familiar territory. And in fact, I've got some quotes from students who I'm not sure if they're in the room. But this was for the Micros EPOS system that you're going to see shortly. And what David originally said, I don't know if he remembers what he said to me, but I know. Well, have we got Carl in the room? No? Okay. Carl thought it was absolutely fantastic and really would really, really help before, during and after service. Judith... that it really provide the student, and this is the key, isn't it, it's to a more realistic managerial experience. So really preparing the students for the hospitality industry. Okay, and this is what you said, David. It's enabled you to procure a ring-fenced teaching and training tool to enhance vocational training skills, allowed you to focus the curriculum in levels of data interrogation, which you can't do with the manual system. So, and we'll hear a bit more.
Good.
I'm glad to hear that. So looking forward, what the trustees, and for the next 50 years, I suppose, they want to keep making sure, and that's why they love doing projects like this, that it's making an impact for the advancement and the development of the appropriate things. So they're going to keep looking at skills development, keep looking at continuous professional development and retention. So... a lot of, when I talk at the PACE conference, a lot of the lecturers come and say, well, actually, what can we apply for? Well, sometimes we look at capital refurbishment. We've just given the University of West London £750,000 to develop a professional development learning suite. That was a unique grant. Oxford Brookes have had £600,000 because they are redeveloping their hospitality section completely. And some of the trustees was night and have gone for a social learning space, which needed a little bit of explanation and translation for some of our trustees, which was quite interesting. Maybe sometimes we help them with curriculum development to try and make sure that the programmes that are offered are really, really innovative, exciting and relevant for the students. Sometimes we do things with Compass, but Ian's not here, is he? But Compass started a fantastic Junior Chefs Academy, absolutely brilliant, which you did for 15 years, I think. So that's stopped through the Compass Foundation. So we've picked up with some of the colleges. It's now called the Young Chefs Academy. It is a fantastic system that Compass developed because it is a Saturday morning chefs club that gets 12 to 16-year-olds cooking. Absolutely brilliant. And we've done that through a number of colleges throughout the UK now. And the conversion rate of those really naughty kids, they then go on and start and do a full-time programme in catering. It's a brilliant course. So well done, Compass. Sometimes we get, and actually getting more and more now, with the EMA having gone, more and more FE normally, the students start on the course and then can't afford their basic kit. So with Russum's, we have developed a starter pack, I suppose you can call it, and it works out just under £200 per student. We don't do any of the means testing, the colleges do, but they apply for about 10 or 15,000 each year, and they do the means testing, and so that Johnny doesn't have to be knocked off the course because he can't afford his basic Chef Whites or skirt or shirt for his wait for the waitering. So we do things like that. Very important. Sometimes we look, enhance the development, student hardship. Other things, we have to say, what is the need? Give us an explanation why you are asking for the money. And also the trustees very rarely will fund a project on their own. And recently we're going in and we're saying, no, you've got to get some money from elsewhere. But in fact, as Dave and I were saying earlier, it's very helpful, and New College Nottingham find this quite a lot, if they can go to their finance director and say, look, I've already got a chunk of money from somewhere like us, it's very helpful for them to then leverage down some more funding. If they go with such an expensive course as hospitality and say, actually, I need a new kitchen, so I need about 250,000. You can imagine what the finance director tends to say. So we try to delve down and ask for local partnerships, and we need to make sure what the students do. A, do you keep them on the course? B, when they leave, where do they go? And if very few go into hospitality, why? What is happening? Is it something in the course that's not making them ready for work, or is it something in your local environment or what? So we try to look at that and support the ones that we think are going to be good. So the DVD, I will give some copies out. I've got some books with me as well that we developed for our 50th. But what I would actually say to the students now is, what are you going to do? Because we know we've got some fantastic opportunities coming up in this country. Not just the Olympics and the Paralympics, we've got the Diamond Jubilee, we've got some fantastic, we've got the golf, we've got the Commonwealth Games, we've got the rugby in 2015. And I think if you remember just one thing today, it's to take every opportunity that you are offered. Doesn't matter how small it is or what little bit you do, but store it, keep some evidence of it. And it is fantastic how your CV suddenly develops. And you think, I don't remember doing that. Oh, yes, I did. And you've got the proof of it. And it really, really makes you even more employable. And have a fantastic time. It is a stunning. You've heard this morning such a wide range of things that are out there. It is a brilliant industry. So good luck and enjoy it. Thank you.
I might say a few words about Mycross and what Mycross is and what Mycross does.
Thanks, Julia. Thanks, David. Firstly, thanks very much for inviting me here today for the launch of the Mycross CPOS system. It's a great pleasure. I finished university back in 2002, and I do love coming back to the institutions. Hands up to those of you who have heard of Mycross Fidelio before, you know, the EPOS system here. Okay, that's a good show of hands. That sort of halvens what I'm going to talk about now, which is great. Mycross Fidelio started in about the 1990, and our bread and butter, if you like, was servicing the IT business requirements for IT technologies in major international hotels, small to medium enterprise hotels, corporate restaurants, independent restaurants. You know, that's where we established. Over the years, we've grown, and now we support a whole variety of industries, including stadia, casinos, resorts, and obviously why I'm here today, education. As David said, I'm Mark Gorson, and I support Mycross's bid and strategy behind the education forward thinking. And it's been an area that we've grown significantly over the past 3 to 5 years. Before that, I'm going to be completely honest to say that it wasn't a direction Mycross Fidelio had looked at. So it's been my push to my MD to say, look, you know, education is a very important part of, you know, the UK. I've worked in hospitality for 5 years when I finished and I loved it. It's a great industry to be in. You know, it's a people's game at the end of the day. So we now have over, 40 sites, 40 universities using Mycross Fidelio. And educational sites, that is. And that's a variety of production environments, so live environments, you know, catering, canteens, but also training environments. And I think it went back about 18 months when I first had a conversation with David, and obviously I, you know, talked to Julia, and I'd like to sort of take this opportunity to thank you both for giving me that opportunity, and certainly Mycross Fidelio for this opportunity of being part of Sheffield Hallam University's strategy. You know, we talked about the business requirements, and David sort of said, well, you know, why do you think Mycross Fidelio would be a good company to partner with? And my simple answer is, and my excitement, my main excitement and drive for pushing this industry is that, you know, in the UK, we have in all areas over 5,000 sites with our systems in, from hotels, front house reservation systems to those restaurants in those hotels. And I said, at the end of the day, you know, you've got 5,000 in the UK, you've got 500,000 worldwide. Now, if your students are coming in and doing programs, they want to be using a system, you know, learning about a system that they're likely to come across when they go out into, you know, the big wide world, whether they go into a Marriott, a De Vere, or they go into a Jamie Oliver's, or, you know, a Gordon Ramsay. You know, you're going to come across a Mycross system. So, you know, that is my main driver for, you know, getting the system in here. You know, the system has, you know, kitchen display functionality, so the chefs still see what the likes of TGI Fridays have in there. You know, the front point of sales are what the guys use to actually transact from an operational perspective. You've got the handheld technologies here. You know, there's a whole variety of this system, and probably you only touch the surface with what we're doing with you guys. And we're not just a software provider. We're not just going to give you a system and say, there you go. We're much more about the strategy. So a lot of other of our universities that we've worked with and colleges, it's about what else can we do for you, you know, and I'm sure that David and I will talk, you know, long into the future about, you know, other systems that we can help your students at the university use in order to set the scene for when they go out into that marketplace. Because, you know, like I say, they probably will come across Micros Fidelio. So, you know, I don't want to sort of go on any longer than that, but I just want to, again, take the opportunity to David and Julia again for their efforts. You know, I saw the document that David had to fill out when it came through from Julia about the bid. So,
oh,
you know,
easy.
I know the work that's gone involved. You know, thanks to the guys who have been on the ground installing the system with our trainers. There's been a lot of work there, you know, reported back to me from our project managers. So, you know, so without further ado, I'm going to, you know, hand over to Kevin, who I think is going to say a few words, and then we'll go from there.
As head of department, I occasionally get nice things to do, and this is one of them. So what I really want to do, I guess, is my job is to give the thanks. Certainly want to thank sort of Julia and the Savoy Educational Trust for the grant we've given. And thank you, I think, for three reasons, two of which is actually expanded on herself. You know, one is the opportunities that this gives our students in terms of what they're going to learn and that industrial experience, industrial knowledge they're going to gain from that. The second one is just the sort of benefit it gives to that student experience anyway. But I think there's a third one, which is actually how this sort of thing showcases us to the rest of the university and shows what we're about and shows what the industry is actually about. You know, for that, there's a sort of a massive thanks for that. So in summary, I guess really what we're going to do is to sort of really thank you, Julia, for taking our bid and for sort of, you know, giving us a grant. But also we've been missing someone out on this, which is David Graham. I mean, David asked me to speak at this, but it was your idea in the first place. So I think if there are any plaudits anywhere, they ought to go to you. So if people would join with me, let's just thank David. We better not thank everybody, could be here all day. Okay, so I think with no further ado, Julia, we ask you to do, do the unveiling.
Oh, am I going to pull the short bit this time? Do we know? Oh, that one. Hello. Uh-huh. Very good.